Anya slid out of the still-open door, then turned back to Stanley and Irena.
Get out of here. Don't stop until you get to the Apaya.
Then she ran after Rue, stopping only long enough to grab one of the flashbang grenades she'd noticed on one of the dead men's combat harnesses. She'd seen the grenades in action before and had a healthy fear of them, but they could also be useful, especially in the dark, in small, enclosed spaces. She ran down the steps leading into the catacombs, but not before she saw that Stanley and Irena weren't leaving. They were arming themselves.
Is idiocy contagious?
Anya came up behind Rue, whistling to let him know it was her. She blasted a man back through the doorway cut into the wall. Then she underhanded the flashbang through the door, bouncing it off the stone cube away from where Garin had been.
Protect your eyes and ears, Rue!
The flashbang went off with a series of bright flashes that pained Anya's eyelids. Even though she'd had her eyes closed and had turned away from the eruption of light in the other room, spots still danced in her vision. Rue sprinted forward, slamming a fresh magazine into the AK-47. Anya followed him into the other section of the cave. Most of the men in the room were down, and Anya was sure some of them were missing. She wondered if Rue's bullets had knocked them over the side, or if they'd fallen over the edge while blinded by the flashbang. The old woman was standing against the wall with her small pistol thrust before her. Anya didn't know if the Baroness was reacting to the sound of Rue's rifle or still retained some of her vision, but she started firing at once. Rue raised his AK. The bullet slammed into the old woman and drove her back against the wall. She slumped to the ground. No one else remained around Garin, who was deathly still on the ground. An overturned electric lantern played over him as he lay sprawled there. Anya knew Garin had to be dead. The old woman had fired at least three times that she had counted, and blood had spread over the stone floor.
Garin!
Rue tore Garin's shirt open. Some unnamed sense warned Anya of the men to her left. She turned, bringing the sword up as metal gleamed on an assault rifle thrusting out of the shadows. Whirling, Anya drew an emergency light stick from her pocket and broke it against the stone cube. Pale blue light invaded the immediate vicinity, drawing four men out of the darkness. One of them was Wolfram Schluter. Gripping the sword in both hands, knowing that Garin and Rue were vulnerable behind her, Anya took the fight to her opponents. No matter what, she wasn't going to let them get past her. In his grief, Rue wasn't even paying attention. Anya chopped through two of the rifles, causing one of them to misfire and the other to blow up in the man's face as rounds cycled through. His face a bloody mess, he stumbled, then fell over the ledge. Ducking low, Anya sliced another man across the stomach, mortally wounding him. Her footing became slippery with his blood. She brought the sword down onto the last man's head. She intended to go for Wolfram Schluter next, but the blade got caught in the dead man's skull. Schluter went to fire at her, but she grabbed the heated barrel and shoved it away as it fired the last four rounds in the magazine. Unable to hold on to the superheated metal, Anya released it and abandoned the sword, intending to call it to her again. Before she could, Schluter reversed the rifle and butt-stroked her in the face, dazing her and driving her back to the edge. He kept up his attack, hitting her once more in the side of the head before she got a hand up. When Schluter drew the rifle back, Anya shifted and launched a sidekick. Her foot drove the rifle into Schluter's face and chest, ripping it from his grip. He grabbed for the knife at his hip, then came at her. Sweeping her left arm out, she blocked the overhead thrust, broke into his overhand strike the way she'd been taught, caught his wrist in her left hand, slammed his elbow with her right hand to make the joint bend, then spun and stepped back under his arm as she twisted the knife to bring it back toward him. The knife went easily into Schluter's chest, propelled by his strength and hers. It pierced his heart, and he crumpled to his knees, looking surprised. His life left him, and she pushed him over onto his side. Anya was cut, bruised, and battered, but no one else remained standing except Irena and Stanley at the doorway. Rue was administering CPR to Garin. As she approached him, Anya felt sorry for Rue. He hadn't just lost an enemy, he'd lost a son. Tears tracked his cheeks.
Rue.
He's not dead. His heart has just stopped. That's all.
There's nothing you can do. She shot him 3 times at close range. He never had a chance. He died trying to save me.
He's not dead. He was wearing a vest.
Anya leaned in closer then, seeing that Garin had been wearing a Kevlar vest under his clothing.
But the blood...
One of the rounds missed the vest and went through under his shoulder. If I can't get him breathing again...
You're starting to flag. Let me...
Anya got down and began to perform the compressions, then leaned down to breathe air into Garin's lungs. When she did, he kissed her, long and tender, surprising her completely. Ugh. Anya recoiled and slapped him hard enough to turn his head.
What are you doing?
He's faking.
I wasn't faking. Not at first, at least. Rue got my heart going again. But I saw you sitting there, and I wondered if you'd try to save me, too.
It was a mistake. An aberration. It won't happen again.
If it takes getting shot to get a kiss, I hardly think it's worth it. You didn't put any effort into it at all.
Anya and Rue helped Garin to his feet. Garin gazed down at the body of Kika Schluter, and sadness showed on his face.
At one time, I really loved her. In all my years, I've never met anyone who attracted me the way that she did.
There was no mistaking the pain in his voice, but Anya didn't think it was all from the wound in his shoulder. Irena and Rue tended to Garin, certain that no emergency personnel would show up for some time. Anya stared at the ruins of the church. What kept coming to mind was the entry in Ozzolini's journal, the part about Thor's treasure being buried under the others. She walked to one of the SUVs and got a shovel and pick from the back.
Where are you going?
Just to check out a hunch. The Roman soldiers buried in that catacomb weren't the only ones buried there. I keep remembering how the Curonians killed the priests who occupied this church.
They hated them. All the old stories tell of the Germans who came to our lands and tried to subjugate our people.
But what if they killed 2 birds with 1 stone? What if they killed all the priests so no one would know they buried Thor under their crypt?
She walked around the remains of the church and found where the apse had been. Crypts were usually constructed under the hemispherical section beyond the altar and to the liturgical east. She broke through the tiles, digging for the crypt. It took over an hour to dig through the bottom of the crypt. Anya struck the floor again and again in different places until the sounds turned hollow. Climbing down into the hidden crypt, using iron handholds mounted into the wall, she found the remains of the Viking who'd chosen to make Courland his home. His mummified body lay in a small boat. Furs and blankets, leather pouches of food, and carved items occupied it with him. Rue, Stanley, and Irena climbed down to join her. Garin stood above them, unable to make the climb down after his recent brush with death.
Not much in the way of treasure, is there? Just a few silver coins and a bag of amber. I don't think that stuff is worth as much these days as it was when Thor got buried.
But he does have his amber axe. It's a beautiful piece of craftsmanship.
Do you think he could call down the lightning with this?
Doubtful.
It would be cool if he had.
There's something about this handle.
Irena's knowing fingers prized at the bottom of the handle. She used Anya's Swiss Army knife to pull the cap from the end. Inside, sheets of calfskin parchment were neatly coiled within the hollow space. Pulse pounding, Anya freed the parchment sheets from the hidden area and aimed her flashlight to examine them. A smile spread across Anya's face as she looked at the carefully drawn map and Norse runes inscribed on the parchment.
This is a map. Thor's trade map. And this, from what I can decipher of it, is his life story. Where he went, what he did, how he came to be here.
Well done, Anya. It appears that you made a very significant find.
Not me. Mario was the one who discovered this story and followed it here. I only picked up the trail he'd left. This is his find. I'm going to make sure he gets full credit for it.
Mario would have wanted that.
I know.
Rogue Angel, God of Thunder is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, Alex Archer. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Nanette Savard, Colleen Delaney, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, James Lewis, Sonny Lasky, Jeff Baker, Michael Replogle, Thomas Penny, Christopher Graybill, Chris Rowan, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts performed by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Nanette Savard. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton. The Rogue Angel theme was composed by Chris Rowan. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Matt Webb, and Dan Smith. Book adapted for graphic audio by Matt Jacobs. If you enjoyed Rogue Angel, be sure to look for Simon R. Green's Deathstalker series, available at Road Stops Everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.graphicaudio.net.